In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
I've said it before, no society in the history of mankind has obeyed its way to more freedom. Instead, with each surrender of one's rights, those in charge demanded more and more obedience as they removed even more rights. Eventually, things become so onerous and so odious that even the passionately compliant can take no more, and the totalitarian regime is eventually removed, usually after restoring a few rights in an effort to appease the masses. But usually that leads to the mass realization that those in power will simply take away rights again, or will soon add new and harsher penalties, which is why the rulers end up being removed, because it is clear you can no longer trust those who rule over you. That is what the left fears, the removal of power, specifically removing them from power, which inevitably means giving power to their political opposition, whom they had just been abusing by using the power of government. Conversely, to the best of my knowledge, and I'm a pretty good student of history, no society has ever overthrown a government that starts with freedom and gives society even more freedom or fiercely defends the rights of the people. There's no need to. Any government that truly embraces and embodies that rights belong to the people, not to the government, have nothing to fear from the people they govern. Not rule, govern. There is a difference. 2 weeks ago, I told you that we were on the verge of seeing the end of COVID mandates, that people are done with the mandates, and that I hope that we are also on the verge of the genuine pushback to hold people accountable. I can also tell you what we're going to be seeing. Those currently in power will now seek to consolidate and preserve whatever power they still have. They will seek to legitimize it as saving people, saving lives, saving money, all things they cannot truly claim legitimate correlation for, because once you have taken an action, you cannot go back in time to test the opposite to see which worked better. It's not correlation, it's speculation. But, and here's the key, they will claim that seizing power was a good thing, and they will do everything they can to delegitimize any claim to the contrary by burying any such claims, because we do have evidence of better results in areas where the official COVID narrative was not followed. Compare Florida's results to New York or California. But those examples will be mocked and ridiculed and discarded by those who want to be able to seize power in the future. They will bury claims that preventative treatments worked, things like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and other treatments, which they literally made illegal to access. They will claim there was no evidence of them working because there's no widespread evidence. Yeah, because they made it illegal to use them. But now, of course, there are numerous studies showing that both of these treatments and others all had great effect on COVID-19. But that's the way and nature of authoritarian and totalitarian regimes. They cannot tolerate dissent. That's the very definition of totalitarians. Only they can have power. There can be no opposition, because if they did allow opposition, it would inevitably lead to their loss of power, because the vast majority of people will choose freedom over oppression every time. Remember this, that the people in power who seized more power and trampled your rights did exactly the opposite of what the Constitution is supposed to protect against. They violated the Constitution, and that can never be forgotten or allowed to ever happen again. Mary Sterrett is a county commissioner from Yamhill County. That's in the northwestern part of the Willamette Valley, and she has recently tangled with the Yamhill County Public Health Board as she tried to get a more balanced information on the website rather than the official COVID narrative. Mary, welcome. It's great to talk to you.
Hey, Mark. Good to talk to you as well.
Yeah, so we love people who stand up to government. We especially like it when people in government stand up to government. And according to the Oregonian, you said, "I don't want to be an accomplice to this lie that vaccines and masks will keep you healthy." The Oregonian is now saying that you have withdrawn your threat after, their words, you failed to discredit COVID-19 vaccines on the government website. So explain what was going on.
All right. Well, for the last couple of years, like everybody else, I've been looking at the data and trying to figure out whether we were getting the complete story. And I don't think that we ever were.
No.
I've had numerous requests to the Oregon Health Authority and the governor specifically. And I asked her questions about, you know, what's the endpoint? What's the data that will actually tell us we're out of this and we you can withdraw your emergency orders? What are the hospital bed capacity data telling us? And everything I was told was pretty much smoke and mirrors. And the real data that would tell us what was going on wasn't forthcoming. So based on that, the it seems to be that the official narrative is just the CDC, Fauci, OHA talking points, which really don't get us to any meaningful veracity to what we're seeing. And we're seeing that the wheels are falling off their narrative. Mm-hmm. So I've been asking for some information on the website, because the website is the outward facing basic communication with the public. And when we tell them things like these inoculations are safe and effective, that's untrue.
Yes.
And we know for a fact that they're not. Now, I've asked that the vaccine adverse event reporting data be shown and that we analyze it and tell people what this is. I was told that the data can't be used because it would require somebody who is knowledgeable and skilled to be able to parse this. But as we know, that the vaccine adverse event reporting data is very inconvenient to their narrative that it is a inoculation.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. And they're not even vaccines because they don't prevent infections. And that's the whole point of a vaccine. A lot of the controversy lately here was around a letter where the Board of Commissioners was supposed to sign and submit this it was a letter of support for the Public Health Board to be able to get accredited. Talk to us a little bit about this accreditation. Why was it so important to the public, to the county Public Health Board to be able to get that accreditation?
Public Health Accreditation Board is an accreditation that is done every 5 years. So the first part of this was a very involved process where they looked into all of the programs of public health. The next was basically a letter of support, wasn't as intense. Was a letter of support from the County Board of Commissioners. I looked at that and I said, I can't really sign off on that because I don't think that we're giving people accurate information. So while this is just a small piece of the accreditation criteria, I thought it was important enough to withhold my signature from it, not really sure what the other commissioners wanted to do. But we held it over, we had some discussion, and then we had a pretty robust discussion regarding the information on the county website. And we did seem to get to a place where it looked like there would be some revisions, and there had been some revisions, of course, not even close to what I'm expecting. And I said I would go ahead and sign it based on the fact that there were some revisions and there was some movement. So by no means am I saying that the fight is over. What I am saying is there are going to be ongoing discussions regarding what we have on our website.
Oh, I bet there will be. All right, it is time for a break. It's all about public servant heroes today, those who are pushing back against Oregon's overreach. More with Mary Sterrett in a moment. And coming up, Oregon trying to blackmail our second guest, right back after this. And welcome back. Mary Sterrett is a Yamhill County Commissioner who took some heat when she asked for some accuracy and balance on the county's public website at a time that they were seeking accreditation and needed a letter from the commissioners. And apparently this accreditation was from a nonprofit group called Public Health Accreditation Board, which describes itself on its website as a measurement of health department performance against a set of nationally recognized, practice-focused, and evidence-based standards, all the usual tripe. So they were resistant making the changes you wanted, in part because they wanted the appearance of having this accreditation. So what would have happened if you had said no? I mean, from what I can see, this is more akin to a good housekeeping seal of approval, in effect. So what would it have mattered if they hadn't gotten this?
Well, I don't know that the lack of a Board of Commissioners letter of support would have meant they didn't get it. But you're right. It's kind of like getting a seal of approval from the Better Business Bureau, which, as everybody knows, the Better Business Bureau is anything but an independent business watchdog, if you will. So yeah, it was one of those things that was a formality, and I still did not feel that it was legitimate to go ahead and give it a stamp of approval from my end of things when I didn't think that it was warranted.
So why were they so desperate for this accreditation, though? That's what I didn't quite get any clarity from the articles that are out there. I mean, it's from a nonprofit that no person on the street has ever heard of. Could they not have done business without it? Was this something other than a smiley face sticker?
Well, I think it's one of those things where when they go through this process and they get this accreditation, it is significant for them. Whether it's required or not, you know, that's a different story. And whether the letter from the Board of Commissioners would have made any difference in their application is a whole nother discussion. This was more symbolic in that, again, I do feel like we're complicit in giving people misinformation, and I want to see changes on our website because people are going there expecting that they're going to get legitimate information they can have confidence in, and there is a lack of confidence in public health policy and public health and government, and there's every reason why there should be, and I want to turn that around.
So you had said that the public health director there in Yamhill was very resistant and pushed back against the balance that you were looking for on the website to include alternative treatments. Why are they so terrified of alternative treatments? And it's not just her. It's all of these little dictators that are out there. There was a major study out of Japan just this week that clearly demonstrated the beneficial of use of ivermectin for COVID, which brings the total to at least 30 studies that I'm aware of since the pandemic showing that ivermectin does in fact work against COVID. So why the fear about allowing other people to see other treatments?
Well, it's all about following the money. And I think it's clear now when we take a look at what Fauci has been doing all along, and that is to make sure that big pharma's pockets are lined. Mm-hmm. And when you have a low cost therapeutic, something that has been shown to be very effective for years throughout the world, it's a very effective low cost drug. No one's going to make any money off it. So what we have to do is keep the wraps. And I think it's clear that the narrative is we cannot allow this information to get out there at all costs. You've seen very well-credentialed doctors, epidemiologists, and professors at universities being canceled because they dare to say there's another option besides the jab or remdesivir, which is another drug which just did terribly in Ebola studies and killed half the people. But this is what the government, federal government, is paying hospitals sort of a bounty every time they hook someone up to a ventilator and use remdesivir. So I think what we're seeing is it's follow the money, and anything that counters that narrative is going to get shot down.
Well, one of the things that she also raised an objection to was that if they put out this other information, and they could label it, you know, this is just alternative information that you can go here. We make no claims about this. But she really said, well, it's about liability. So does that mean that now that they're pushing these vaccines and have recognized that there could be a liability on things, does that mean that those that take the vaccines based on their recommendation, does that mean the county is taking liability for those if someone has an adverse reaction?
Well, when I brought that up, our county attorney said, hey, you know, we're just doing our job following orders from the CDC and OHA, so we're covered. I never think that that is an excuse. We're just doing our jobs. We know what that term harkens back to. And Nuremberg trials, it was never a defense then, and it isn't going to be now. When you say you're just doing your job, it doesn't mean that you don't have liability. When you know that you are doing something which is, despite the fact that the political elite are giving it a rubber stamp, it doesn't give us a pass.
Mm-mm. Well, and the other side of that too is that you want people to be able to make fully informed decisions. So is there another legal issue there if they're not allowing people to see other options that are out there? I mean, because you want people to make fully informed decisions. Do they not want people to have good information about making choices about their own health?
Well, I think they really, really believe that the information that is in the prevailing narrative is actually the only narrative that should be put out there. We have since lost sight of the fact that there can be divergent opinions and there can be a diversity of opinions in science. Look at what happened with a drug called thalidomide. Years ago, pregnant women were given this drug as a to help them with morning sickness. And then we saw a whole bunch of babies born without limbs. And then they came to the conclusion that, oh, this might not be a good idea. But at the time, the narrative was, take this drug if you have morning sickness. So science is always evolving. If you look at the FDA website, all the drugs that have been taken off the market, even things like heartburn drugs that were actually killing people, we can see that the science is never settled. And then if you look at the vaccine adverse event reporting system, for years we used that as a bellwether of whether or not something was causing problems. We always looked to that, at least since the 80s when it was established, and parents were finding that their kids who were vaccinated with the DPT vaccine were having some significant adverse events, and they demanded that there be a reporting system. No, it's not perfect, but we used it in the past, and now all of a sudden, even though it's blowing up with fatalities and adverse events, we're saying, well, it's not really accurate.
Yeah, really. You know, if we had more public officials fighting to keep government in check rather than expand it, we'd all be better off. We will wrap things up with Mary Starrett after this. Mary Starrett is our guest today. She is the Yamhill County Commissioner, and we've been talking with her about her fight to get good, balanced information on her county's public health website, including alternatives to the vaccines, which are not stopping the spread or infection, and which are having adverse effects. But let's keep trying it over and over and over again, the definition of insanity. You know, it has bothered me from the beginning that no preventative treatments and no early treatments were essentially allowed. I mean, that's the opposite of good medicine that we've learned over thousands of years. In a normal pandemic, you would try an all-of-the-above approach because you don't know what's going to work. So you would have tried ivermectin, HCQ, zinc, all of it. In a pandemic that they're trying to control the narrative, you quickly and narrowly focus on a single solution. The vaccine, and only the vaccines, is allowed to be the answer. So can they point to people who have died from taking vitamin D and zinc? Because I certainly know people who have died from the vaccines.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I know people who've had some significant, serious reactions to the inoculation. And I think once again, is that this is so large in scope that it goes beyond a county health department, it goes beyond the states, and it goes beyond the federal government. But when you look at other countries like India, or even Mexico, which they're trying to discredit that there was a COVID kits given out that contained ivermectin. They said, well, it wasn't given to ambulatory patients. What they're admitting is that this is given to people who were very, very sick. Mm-hmm. And we've seen enormous results, positive results. But again, it goes to the big pharma. This is a very, I like to say it's a sinister plan that has resulted in many people dying simply because of the treatments and because of these inoculations, which we're still in clinical trials. Do you know that the clinical trials for pregnant women won't end until December of 25?
Yes.
But yet your doctors are being told, or your doctors are telling patients, go ahead and take it, it's safe. On our website, it says, yes, it's recommended. Now, how do you do that to women? The miscarriage rate,
yes,
is through the roof.
Yes.
But they're denying that there's any correlation.
Yeah, 300% increase in miscarriages, just that the military itself had found. What bothers me about the county health board was what they were doing was they were trying to control the narrative, and seizing control of the narrative really stops people from being able to ask questions. And it seems like with the certification, they're trying to say we have the blessed knowledge, and everything else is fault. Was that some of what you were thinking as well?
Well, you know, this whole thing with the letter of accreditation just came along. The timing of this was just serendipitous, and it really didn't have any impact other than for us to draw attention to what I've been asking for the last year and a half, is that we stop saying things on our website, which we now know to be patently untrue. So this really wasn't the big piece here. The big piece was, what are we going to do about what's on our website? This just was the catalyst for it.
Again, the people that are in power are just trying to have people live constantly in fear. You've got the UK, you've got Denmark, I think the Netherlands, and now Finland have all announced that they're ending the COVID mandates. You've got Denver, of all places, lifting their mask mandates. So why is it that the mandates are still enforced here when so many other countries have recognized that the mandates are not working, are not necessary? Does that mean that the health works here, but not over there, or that the science works over there, but somehow not here?
Well, all you have to do is take a look at the political elite and those who have been, apparently if masks are so effective and so necessary for the peasants, then why is it that we're seeing the likes of Governor Brown of Oregon and Gavin Newsom in California and on and on and on, folks to just sort of flaunt that whole concept by being in crowded places without a mask? So either does work and it's necessary, or it doesn't work.
That's right. That's right.
But it's more about control. It's not really about anything other than, I think, a very dark plan to basically just kind of take away the identity of people mm-hmm. and keep them in subjugation. And that's never more apparent than when we see our school kids, as yes. you know more than any superintendent, in the classroom, sitting there with these paper masks, which are so not only ineffective, but they're damaging in terms of
yes.
of speech, of social interactions. All of that stuff we're finding out now is very disturbing.
Oh, absolutely. 23% decline in cognitive abilities for kids with all of these mandates. I know you've got to get going. I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it, Mark.
Unfortunately, she had a last-minute meeting that she had to get to, the busy life of a county commissioner, but we will definitely want to talk to Mary some more in the near future. Coming up, we'll welcome back another fighter against Oregon's totalitarian regime, Mark Thielman. The Democrat Secretary of State blocked Oregon parents from choosing better schools for their kids, but there's another thing going on, blackmail. We'll talk about that right after this. Just to build a little on Mary Sterrett and her battle with the health board, here's a fun thing. Go to NIH, as in National Institutes of Health, NIH.gov, and in the search box, type ivermectin and cancer. You'll see studies with titles like ivermectin, a potential anti-cancer drug derived from an anti-parasitic drug. Ivermectin has new application in inhibiting colorectal cancer cell growth. Anti-parasitic drug ivermectin can suppress ovarian cancer. Ivermectin as an inhibitor of cancer stem-like cells. Anti-tumor effects of ivermectin. Pages and pages of results, 20 results per page. If you keep digging, you'll even see studies about the benefits of hydroxychloroquine on cancer. And yet somehow, the public health departments want you to think ivermectin is on par with arsenic or cyanide, that it can't be used to treat COVID. It's a parasitic drug used in horses. Yes, but it was originally created for use in humans. That's the advance of science. But the people in charge don't want you to know these things, just like they don't want you to know the official death count of COVID is only 4% of what they said it was. 96% of COVID deaths were with COVID, not from COVID. Just like the PCR tests were returning some 93% false positives, showing a massive overcount of cases, which is why the flu disappeared. So here's the thing. If they keep lying about the science, how can you trust the science? I'd like to welcome back Mark Thielman, the superintendent of the Alsea School District, which is southwest of Corvallis, about halfway between Philomath and Waldport. He is also a Republican candidate for governor. Mark, it's good to talk to you.
It's very good to be here. Thanks for having me.
You know, if it's not one thing, it's another. You guys have been hitting back at this overreach of government, fighting to keep your school open, fighting back against mandates that only have a basis in politics, not science. And that's just scratching the surface, really, with you. But probably the biggest thing lately, anyway, is the state's attack on your school district over masks, which you and your school board want kids to have an option to wear. So walk us through what's happening. How did this latest fight start?
Well, it started really back in November when a couple of my board members work for medical facilities like Samaritan Health Services. And this information was coming through the OHA and into the hospital administrations. There was concern about cloth and as Omicron was approaching, there was concern about cloth and paper masks not having any efficacy at filtering out the virus as a mitigation. And so that led to Samaritan Health Services making an announcement in the Gazette Times, and they said that they would no longer allow cloth or paper masks into the hospitals in the Corvallis Philomath area. And of course, kids have cell phones and they get notifications just like we adults do. And so the Gazette Times notification goes out. Next thing you know, we all these high school kids coming in, talking to the principal and talking to me and saying, well, these masks don't work. And so, you know, when you make an announcement like that, while forcing the entire population of Oregon to wear paper cloth masks indoors, that has a tendency to erode confidence.
Yeah, just a little bit there. So in terms of your policy, you guys were trying to make it now optional for kids to wear a mask. Is that correct?
Yeah. And, you know, it was well timed. The Samaritan announcement was well timed because I was already working on, you know, how do we do this in a way that builds unity, that doesn't undermine those that do believe in masking or have confidence in it, so that we can have one school, one staff, making different decisions respectfully and supporting each other. And in this day and age, that's a rarity and it's kind of revolutionary. So the mask optional thing is the only way to cover all of the needs for those who don't have confidence or think that masking is even harmful, which is actually turning out to be the case, according to the CDC. Then they don't have their kid mask. And if they think it does work or gives some efficacy, then they do have their kid mask. And that's what the policy basically does. And it's not, what it isn't is, it's not a banning of masks. We're not out saying, we're going to ignore the mandate. We're not following it, because we still require masks to be worn on the bus. We still require masks to be worn during sporting events, because that blends into the OSA, which is a different organization, and they have a mask rule. So I put it out to our parents, asking them for flexibility and understanding and a little bit of give and take, and that the board has directed me to implement this policy, and that based on all of the cutting edge science, in particular the January 14th CDC announcement and admission that cloth masks, paper masks give very little to no efficacy against stopping Omicron because the particles are so small. Yeah, but the problem is that the CDC also on that same day, or in that same announcement, acknowledged that widespread masking has had negative impacts on mm-hmm. kids. Mm-hmm. So here's the ethical dilemma for superintendent, for school board. Well, if we know, and all of the science is now ubiquitously clear, that cloth and paper masks don't work, nope. probably have never worked, but we know they harm kids, how can we keep forcing them into them?
Yeah, exactly. So now the state wants to freeze funding for LC School District, taking away COVID relief money. What kind of money are we talking about, and how much of an impact is that going to have?
Well, the way I handled it, and the way what I expected, because I explained to the school board, you know, the only funds they can freeze, because this is enforced through OHA and not the Department of Education, they can't freeze our regular funding. There's no precedent to do that. Well, the only thing they can freeze is our COVID relief funds. And our district has grown 500% in 20 months. Mm. So we have plenty of revenue right now that we cannot see that $275,000 that they supposedly froze. Because I haven't even spent most of it. I think we have like $180,000 of it left. And we spent some last year, but this year I haven't spent any of it. And we don't need to spend any of it. And you have another 2 years to spend it. So I have a feeling this thing will work itself out by then.
but the fact that they're trying to withhold that money simply because they don't like what you're doing there, is there any other way to look at this other than the state is trying to blackmail you into compliance?
Yeah. And, you know, they reminded me that when we accepted these funds, we had to sign this attestation saying that we would follow all federal and state guidelines. Well, I am. I'm following federal CDC guidelines. And I let them know that as much. And then I told them, why aren't you? We are the only school district in the state of Oregon. Well, we're the only school district in the state of Oregon currently in compliance with CDC guidance.
Hmm. Can you clarify that?
Well, the CDC guidance said that there's no efficacy in masking and that masking does harm, in particular, loss of intelligence, delay in nonverbal vocabulary comprehension, anxiety, cardiopulmonary, acidification of blood. There was a whole list of things that have been determined, development of boils from the mask on faces and things, little faces, you know, that's not fun for kids. So, you know, some of these impacts they're all negative. Some are minor and some are major. And the thing is, why would we do that if we know they're not serving the primary
purpose
of wearing them in the first place?
That's right.
I mean, it's insanity.
Yep, it absolutely is. And it comes down to obey or be punished as far as the state is concerned. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. We'll have more with Mark Thielman. He is a Republican candidate for governor. You can find out more about that by heading to Mark for Oregon. That's spelled out F-O-R. Mark is with a C, M-A-R-C, fororegon.com. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Mark Thielman. He is a candidate for Oregon's governor on the Republican side. He's also the superintendent of Alsea School District, which is southwest of Corvallis, about 60 miles or so, heading to the coast there. And so, Mark, we've been talking about these mask mandates that have been just riling people there at the state because you're just not obeying. And during the break there, we were talking, since other school districts are essentially out of compliance with the CDC, can they be sued?
Yeah, they can be sued. I mean, look what's happening in England. Okay, it was a lawsuit that ended the mandates, and many more have now followed in their little magistrate courts. You know, kind of like our Supreme Court. And the thing for me is, I have an obligation as I'm the only employee of the school board. So they hire me, I get to oversee the hiring of everyone else, and I have an obligation in my contract, and that is to serve the school board and protect the board and protect the district, as well as, you know, doing all my normal fiduciary duties. And so it doesn't take a rocket scientist to say, wow, wait a minute, there could be a problem coming. If the CDC and there's other, you know, and our World Health Organization has also talked about negative impacts of masking. But if they say there's guaranteed negative harm for no positive gain, then forced wearing a mask can't be justified. And if we continue to do it while knowing it doesn't work but does harm, then anybody who's harmed can sue the school district for being complicit. And to me, it's an ethical dilemma. Okay, who do I want to upset? Do I want to upset the very parents we serve so that we can be sued by them? I don't think that's a good parent relationship game plan, personally.
No. Uh-uh.
I would rather have Colt Gill, OHA, you know, Pat Allen and Dr. Seidlinger and Governor Brown upset with me, because first and foremost, they don't know any of my students' names. They don't know any of our parents, and they don't know what we have to face on a daily basis with the anxiety and the stress, and then the teachers having to tell kids to put their mask up. And there's just this unspoken stress in the system.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the way it used to be. So you know what we saw this week when masks came off? By Wednesday, it was a weird day. Nobody was referred to the office in any of the schools. It's like, what? There were kids focused. There was just this nice, open calmness. Kids and teachers engaged in the process of learning.
Wow.
And I cannot stress enough, every school board in this state should pass their version of the ALSEA school board resolution, and they should implement this. And all they have to worry about is that temporarily their federal funds will temporarily be frozen. So what is our kids mental health, what is their engagement in education with each other in a positive way worth? I think it's worth that, personally.
Absolutely. And there's that study by Brown University that said that some of the mandates, and especially the mask wearing, has contributed to a 23% decline in cognitive abilities for kids.
A loss of intelligence.
Absolutely. Yeah. And these need to go, and other school districts need to stand up and do what's right for their kids. And, you know, I was watching a clip of you on Laura Ingraham from a few days back. And she brought up something that we have talked about previously here on iSpy Radio, that not a single case of COVID was traced back to the ALSEA classrooms as a source. So you've protected kids from COVID. You've had a massive uptick in enrollment, 500%, you said. Shouldn't the state be using you as an example of what to do for everyone else to follow, rather than punishing you for getting it right?
Well, this is a risk I take every time I come on your radio show. You guys make a tremendous amount of sense. You would think that, but that has not been my experience.
No.
I don't know. Yeah, I shake my head just like you're doing.
Yeah, it's crazy. I wonder if you happen to catch that study by Johns Hopkins this week. It found that not only did the lockdowns and other mandates not work, they actually may have contributed to more COVID deaths than had we not done any of it. And they said, quote, lockdowns push people to meet at less safe indoor places. And indeed, we do find evidence that limiting gatherings was counterproductive and increased COVID-19 mortality. They went on to say a standard benefit cost calculation leads to a strong conclusion. Lockdowns should be rejected out of hand as a pandemic policy instrument. I mean, it is really the opposite of what that stupid Imperial College London predicted. They had predicted lockdowns would reduce death rates by up to 98%. So you've got the hospital there saying the masks don't work. You got Johns Hopkins saying that the lockdowns don't work. Are we adding those two organizations to fake news now? Or are we going to listen to the actual science?
I think we should. Well, I think we should. So, you know, I sent a letter to the government on Monday, and it has made quite a splash. So I informed Colt Gill, because he's the one who sent me the nasty gram. I informed him that we are continuing to comply with the mandate. We're just applying rules differently. And that OHA is behind the curve of the science. And I explained the ethical dilemma and why we needed to move forward. And then I also said, I've sat in many meetings with you, Colt Gill, and other superintendents in which ODE staff has expressed the disproportionate impact on students of color and LGBTQ, SIA plus kids and socioeconomically disadvantaged students and even on a bigger stage, the impact on special education service for special education kids. And I said, so all of these populations have been disproportionately affected by this pandemic and AKA the mandates that have been imposed to, quote, combat it. And what is ODE and OHA's solution? Let's make masking and vaccines permanent. These people have literally lost their minds. Yeah. Colt Gill is incompetent. Governor Brown is incompetent. Dr. Seidlinger is incompetent. And I cannot express that enough. They do not have the best interests of the people of Oregon in mind. If they did, they would follow the science, but they don't.
No, they don't. The thing is, we're seeing in other states, they're starting to throw off the mandates. They're starting to throw off these lockdowns. They're starting to throw off all of these dictates from the government. You had in Washington, Washougal student, there was a massive walkout over masks. Other schools then followed mm-hmm. suit. Denver has decided they're getting rid of the mask mandates, although it is kind of a weird psychosis with some of these people. And here's a tweet from Director Tay. He's the Denver School Board Vice President. And he says, I don't believe this will be an issue in Denver public schools, referring to the masks mandates that Denver threw off. But if our district moves to lift the mask mandate like other metro school districts, I am prepared to bring forth a policy to add masks to our district dress code. I mean, why are you so desperate to keep gags on kids?
You know, you really have to question that, because there's a simpler way to do that. It's saying masks optional for the rest of time.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, then you just covered it.
Yeah, exactly right. Okay, let's go and take a break there. Coming back, we're going to be talking about another fight that Mark Thielman has been involved in, and that was the fight to get real school choice on the ballot. We'll talk about that next. And welcome back in our final segment now with Mark Thielman. He's the superintendent for the Alsea School District, which is southwest of Corvallis. He was also the chief petitioner for the Real School Choice ballot measure, which Democrats Secretary of State Fagan refused to let on the ballot. Elected Democrats say they're for education, just not good education, and no one should be able to teach kids except Democrats. Sad to say it, but that's the state of the state here. Mark is also a Republican candidate for governor. His website is Mark, M-A-R-C, 4-F-O-R, Oregon.com. That's Mark4Oregon.com. And I want to talk to you a little bit about that governor's race in a little bit here. But in terms of what's going on with the ballot measure, as I mentioned, Secretary of State rejected this. Give us a little breakdown in terms of what happened there.
Well, that is it's a beautiful expression of politics mm-hmm. in action, mm-hmm. and the collision of ideologies between parents who want to have choice to direct their child's education, whether it be in a public school or a parochial school or a homeschool, et cetera, a small private school, and the great state machine that is desperately trying to preserve itself. So we went through the balloting process. The title process was already engaged. It already had met the threshold, but they did what's called a constitutional analysis. And Shamia Fagan is wholly unqualified to do such an analysis based on the letter that I received from her, which had no supportive Department of Justice opinions, no supportive precedences. It was merely, we have concluded that you're trying to fund religious schools and that violates Article 1 of the Constitution. And because of that, you're trying to ask voters to change more than one part of the Constitution. Nobody called. There was no questions. There was no engagement to clarify. And to me, it's so unprofessional as to be elementary, if you will. I literally wanted to respond in cram, because I thought she would have a better chance of understanding. So here's how the school choice thing worked, is that it assigns money to all kids in a school district's attendance area. So right now they only assign money to kids that are signed up in the public school. But this would say, we got to find out all the kids that are school aged and we're going to price them all into the system. And that's a good thing if you're the Oregon School Education Association, because you now have leverage to ask the state for a bigger piece of the pie, right? Because you got to fund all these kids. The money goes to the local school district. And only if the parent says to the local school district, I would like to access my pass-through funds or my funds for my child who I'm homeschooling. If that's the case, the district then says, okay, we will send 80% of your child's funding to the nonprofit agency of your choice. And then that they would do that. The nonprofit agency gets the money, and then the parent gets to work with the nonprofit agency, just like you do with a prepaid card for your insurance, out-of-pocket insurance. And the parent might say, well, I want to go to, Nature Discovery School, and they would send the tuition for Nature Discovery School. But see, the thing is, when the money goes to the nonprofit, it's no longer government money.
Right.
So it's not the legislature in Article 1. It's not the legislature saying we're going to send this much money to religions. And what it's saying is we're going to assign this money to price in right. all kids into the system. And once that money goes to the nonprofit, it's no longer government money. So then if a parent directs it to the Catholic private school, there's no violation of the Constitution. And it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, and to me, aside from the mechanics of it, that as you say, it's going to a nonprofit, to me, you're really funding the parents, not the religious organizations. Plus, I just totally disagree with her on that. I mean, every year, Oregon pays people in multiple forms. You've got direct paychecks because they work for the state, or more to the point, tax refunds. So is Oregon, under Secretary of State Fagan's idea, is Oregon going to prevent taxpayers from spending any of that money being passed through the state on religious organizations? Are they now unable to donate to churches if they want to? I mean, it's a very twisted logic that she used.
Well, there is no logic that she used. She's not able. It's not that she's not and she's intelligent. I've met her. I've talked with her. But her ideology doesn't allow her to access that intelligence.
No, she's a slave to it.
She needed to kill that thing. And so she looked for something that in her mind she could justify to kill it. The good news is we get to appeal it. And if we're not successful in appeal, then we will tweak the wording. And we will go out and get our 2,500 signatures that took us a whole, 2 day or a couple of weekends to collect. I mean, the signatures are still coming in. and I want people to understand that, long after we got on the balloting done, and there will be a school choice ballot or initiative on the ballot in 2024. That was the original timeline. It's going to happen. And progressives, if you will, need to open their minds and understand that every parent has a right to have input and direction in finding the best educational program or pathway for their child. That is a fundamental natural right. It precedes government. Government should be facilitating that, not opposing it.
Yeah, absolutely. So in the time that we have left here with you, I want to talk to you a little bit about your campaign. I didn't know this until very recently, but apparently the ORP, Oregon Republican Party, has implemented some rules that if you haven't raised $100,000 and don't have 1,000 donors, You're not allowed to be on the televised debate stage. Talk to us about what's going on there.
Well, they wanted, you know, there's so many candidates, so they wanted to create a threshold so that, you know, they didn't have all 20 candidates on the stage. And, you know, that happened with the 2016 campaign, mm-hmm. where there were 17 Republicans, et cetera. And I'm okay with that. The thing is, the threshold's awfully high. So what it does is it disproportionately impacts the more grassroots style campaigns. And there's a lot of them. Mine is a grassroots campaign. Mm-hmm. But what's been really exciting about my campaign, and for whatever reason, I'm just really, really appreciative and grateful, is, like I told my campaign at the very beginning, okay, it's going to take us a while to ramp up because we have no financial connections. we haven't built those relationships. We're not wealthy people. So here's what we do. We start with influence, and then we get people curious about the message, and then the money will come. And that's exactly what's happening. So I was on Lars Larson talking about the school thing. And, man, it was a very, very, effective interview. And Lars stopped me because, you know, I tend to talk a lot. And he said, hey, we only have a minute left. I want you to give yourself a plug for governor. And I did. And I get off the radio interview. And, about a minute later, I check my phone and there's 15 donations.
Oh, that's cool.
I told people this. So I think last night we just topped 750. We're on track to make the 1,000. And many, many, many funders are lining up. And the thing is, I want people to understand, it's the number of donations that matter for my campaign, because I think we're going to be fine on hitting the 100,000. And so $1, $5, $3, $10, those are the kinds of donations we're looking for. So if you're a married couple, give two $10 donations, because it's the number that matters. Once we hit the 1,000, I have a much larger funders that have contacted the campaign just this week because they love the message. And they said, hey, yes, you know, you just get to the 1,000. And if you're short on the other end, we'll cover it. And I'm so excited.
That's
so
really
please,
cool.
Don't give too much. Yeah.
That's
just
really
give
cool.
a little and get me on that stage, because it's in the interest of everyone to have me there.
That's right. Oh, and his website one more time, Mark, M-A-R-C, 4, F-O-R, Oregon.com, Mark, 4, Oregon.com. We'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. Mark, thanks so much for your time, and good luck continuing that fight on every level.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and I hope to be back on sometime. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. The problem with party politics is that you have to play by their rules until you win. Then they play by yours. I'd like to think that we have more than 15 people out there listening who can donate. Let's beat Lars's audience. You heard Mark. It's the number of donors, not dollars, at this point. He needs at least 300 more people to donate. $10 will do it, $5 will do it, but since you're there, maybe 25 or 50 or even 100. We need public officials who will stand up to government for the public. So do what you can. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.